says, bless my grandpa. I hope that the word is clear and understood throughout everybody, and that you could just move in us through him. As you see.
Amen.
Yeah.
Happy Mother's Day, mothers. And I think it's fitting that we address mothers today as best as I can. And this evening I'm going to address and teach on mothers from the ideal perspective. There's all types of mothers, all different types of circumstances and situations we find mothers in. Some deliberately, some by accident, some by circumstances. Before I begin teaching tonight and ministering the word of the Lord, one of my students, Dr. Deep Singh, lives in the Punjab in India. And he requested that I ask all of you to pray for India and Pakistan. It's a tinderbox over there, if any of you are watching the news. Both of them are nuclear powers. And if someone loses their cool, and I was discussing this with Stanley Wilkes, someone losing their cool, it could be a catastrophic problem. Millions of people could die. So we need to pray for the world situation. We need to pray for Brother Singh, Pastor Singh, and I know that you will. Tonight, I'd like to remind you that Jesus saw the cross, endured the cross, for the joy that was set before him. And what was that joy? And I'll ask my favorite all-time namesake to start passing out the papers. Now, I've chosen to use the King James Version, and I find that sometimes when we use different versions, it's hard for people to follow sometimes because of the translation differences. And for the most part, they're all very good if you're using NIV or ESP, or as long as it isn't the New World Translation, the emphatic dialogue.
You're using ESP, you might want to put it away.
Yeah. But I like the King James because I like the language. It's beautiful, but I understand that people sometimes have difficulty with it. So, I'm not here to give an apologetics why you should use the King James translation, but I am here to say we must learn and know the Word of God. I think of Mother's Day, I think of my own mother who passed away some years ago, and for some of us, our mothers have passed away. I think of Brother Stan and his mother passing away, how long ago was it, about 4 years ago?
Longer than that. I think it was 2011.
It's amazing. And all of us, I lost my mom back in the 80s. And
Ryan's mom 2 years ago?
Pardon?
Yeah, 2 years ago.
2 years ago. And we know, looking back on our mothers, that there was a lot of sacrifice on their parts. And it's because of our mothers, we're alive. How many of you know that's important? So, Jesus endured the cross for the joy that was set before him. Now remember, I'm talking and ministering from the ideal, not from the exceptions or the problems. But nevertheless, we should always shoot for the highest. The highest is to be like Christ. The highest is to ask God to give us grace to be more like Jesus every day. That's what we're committed to. Sonship is committed to. It isn't childship, it's sonship. We want to be mature sons and daughters. And that's true in everything we do. We always should aim the highest we possibly can or imagine. On Mother's Day, in Revelation 21:9, especially in the book of Revelation, and for you that have the notes, there came unto me one of the seven angels which had the seven vials full of the seven last plagues, and talked with me, saying, come here, and I will show you the bride, the Lamb's wife. I will show you the bride. Isn't it true at weddings, there's a song that they normally sing, or they don't sing it anymore. Here comes the bride, and they play the organ, ya-da-da-da-da. Here comes the bride, the Lamb's wife. Jesus went to the cross for the woman. Women are very special. Mothers are very special. If you look through the scriptures, you will find that it was the mothers that were surrounding the cross when Jesus was crucified. It was the mothers that wept over their children. It was the mothers in Zion. And so we find in the book of Revelation that I'm going to show you the bride of Christ. I'm going to show you the Lamb's wife. And when we go to Proverbs, the first part of Proverbs, if you would see it, is who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. A virtuous woman. Maybe that's why they named their daughters Ruby. Ruby, Ruby. Their price is far above rubies. In Proverbs 31:11, it says, the heart of her husband does safely trust in her, so that she shall have no need of spoil. I think one of the tragedies we hear about all the time, and I don't even like to mention it, a man that cannot trust his wife never has peace. Years ago, when Sharon, myself, lived in this little town called Bellflower, California, I was amazed one day as I saw this lady in a muumuu run out of the front door, down the street to catch the mailman. And what she would do, she would hunt down the mailman to get the mail before the mail showed up at the house when her husband got up and got the mail. And it was a scene. I think that's how she stayed in shape. Especially in a muumuu, running down the street after the mailman. But one day, she was hiding the bills, the money she was paying, and the things that she was doing with the money. Because what he would do is he'd come home and hand the check over to her. Now, am I saying you can't hand your check over to your wife or your money to your wife? No. But in this particular case, he trusted her to dispense with the finances in a proper way. And what she was doing was squandering it and using it for frivolities. And the day came when the mailman came early, and he had to get up early for work. And he looked at the bills, and he went into a rage that woke up the whole block. And I saw him when I went out, banging on the house. Banging. I can't believe it. He realized that he was deceived for all that time, that she was hiding things from him, especially the finance. A virtuous woman, a good mother, you can safely trust in her. And if in verse 31:12 it says, she will do him good, not evil, all the days of her life. She is committed to doing her husband good. It goes on further to say, and I did not record here on these notes, that she takes care of her household. She takes care of her children. And she takes care of her husband. It says she will do him good, not evil, all the days of his life. And in Proverbs 31:22, probably the most important thing to the husbands, she makes herself coverings of tapestry. Her clothing is silk and purple. And for all those fact checkers, like Reverend Justin and Dr. Aaron and a few of you others, I even had to go through the lexicons to make sure I got it right. The word is marbad. in the pronunciation. I wonder why they say Marbath.
What does that mean, Marbath?
Well, I'm going to come to that, Andrew. I'm coming to it. She takes and puts on tapestries. In other words, this virtuous woman is one that does not wear bag lady clothes. She is one that makes herself enticing to her husband. That what makes her virtuous. She does not shy away from him. She is one that dresses to make him proud, to help him fulfill his needs, to help. And this virtuous woman is the highest ideal. So much so that King Solomon, with 1,000 women, only had one that he really cared about. And that was the Egyptian woman. So the word Marbath is masculine, but it talks about clothing, that she dresses as well as she possibly can. It says in the Song of the Women, a very important thing that I'm going to discuss with you in Samuel. I don't know, mothers, if you realize how much power you carry. I look at I look at Natalie, she's got one problem. But I look at also my dear sister Beth, and she's got these pretty girls. And Brother Stanley and his and Jane are going to have another granddaughter, which I'm sure they're proud of. Well, that's two more. But women don't realize the power they possess. The power they possess. And it's probably because God made them with a caring heart, a caring nature, a nurturing way about them. And sometimes we overlook that. My mom, who's been gone or passed away some years ago, I look back at the things that my mother did for me. That when I had a boo-boo, you know what a boo-boo is, Kurt? When I was in sad shape, she was there to comfort me during the difficult times. In the Song of Solomon, there was women getting together. Daisy, and I know that the other ladies here, young ladies, know that girls can cackle, they can get together, and they develop songs, and they have a camaraderie much different than boys do. And Evangeline, I'm sure you do that too with your friends, and of course, I know that Amazing Grace does that too, and Joy will do that. But there was a time when King Saul came from a victory, and there was a statement and a song that the women developed. And the song was, and the woman answered one another as they played, Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s. Ladies, I don't know what it is about mothers. I don't know what it is about women. They can either make you or break you. It's the power they have. And that song was not just sung that one time. It became a famous song throughout all the Middle East. You hear the Philistines talk about it in their battles. Isn't Saul the one that only slayed 1,000, David his 10,000s? It was on the top 10 charts for the Middle East. Women have power of the words that they speak. The power of the church, the woman, the bride, is formidable. A man that loves his wife will lay down his life for her, try to do the very best for her in response to her faithfulness. And when Saul heard this in 1 Samuel 18, Saul was very wroth. The saying he didn't like it. He displeased him, and he said, they have ascribed unto David 10,000, and to me they have ascribed but thousands. What could he have more but the kingdom? He needed the affirmation from women. Women, do you realize that you can make or break your husband? In the major, some of the major corporations, when they interview an executive, and I'll share this with you if you hadn't heard it before, they interview not only the man and his qualifications, but they also interview the wife. They bring him in, and they go through the qualifications. It's all set up. And what the man does, or the interviewer, he will start leveling certain negative accusations against the person he wants to hire. Well, I noticed on your resume that you have shown up several times late for work, or I noticed that you didn't wear your coat at certain meetings and you were called out on the carpet for it. And he would deliberately try to provoke the man as he sat there and heard these negative comments about him. And all he was really doing was trying to solicit an affirmation from his wife. Sometimes the wife would say, "Hey, Charlie, I told you to wear your coat. Charlie, I told you to be on time." Or she will get and say, "Listen, he was taking care of a sick child that day." They want to know if she will defend her husband or tear him down. How important is a virtuous woman? How important is a mother? Mother can call their children stupid or idiots. Or they can say, "You can do better, I know you can," and they can encourage him to heights. Most of the presidents of the United States, if you read any of their biographies, you'll see that it was their mothers that, I believe, were responsible or helped being responsible for putting that man into the presidency. It was the praying mother that put this president into the presidency. It was the praying president, the praying mother of a president, or for those in executive positions. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't people in executive decisions that weren't, if you will, orphans or things of that nature. God puts up, raises up who he raises up. But women, you take a very powerful place in the life of your children, but also the virtuous woman takes a very powerful place in the life of her husband. I'm more interested in the affirmations of my wife than anybody else. I'm more interested in the affirmations my mother gave me as a child. Yes, my dad had influence. We'll get to that on Father's Day. He whipped me into shape. But Mama was always there to put Vaseline on my buttocks after Dad finished and said, "That's okay, baby. You'll be okay." The women came together and they convinced the king, King Saul, the first king of Israel, that he was a loser. And he took it to heart. And he carried it with him. And he became resistant. And David, who was very loyal to him, he turned on him. It's a very difficult thing that King Saul went through. And you have to remember, King Saul was what we call a head and shoulders ministry. What do I mean by that? He was taller than everybody else if you read the accounts in Samuel. And also, he was a very good-looking man. He was the Cary Grant, if you will. Some of these people don't even know who Cary Grant was. The Justin Bieber, whoever. He was the Hulk Hogan, if you will. Is that wrong too?
No,
Give me a name.
I recognize that name. I recognize that name.
The Justin Goodwin.
Justin Goodwin. Yeah.
Nailed it.
Okay. Notice the women aren't affirming you. Is that true, ladies?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Very good.
The room's getting very small.
Yeah, the room is getting small. So ladies, virtuous women build up their husbands and don't tear them down. A virtuous woman, if she is virtuous towards her husband, she will raise her children to be examples and minister to them out of the abundance of her heart. This may be controversial for some of you, and I'm not asking you to go along with me 100% on this, but I'd like to take your attention to King David. You know, King David had a few wives. How many of you know that? A few wives. Quite a few. But there was one woman in his life that exceeded everyone. And it was the woman that broke his heart. How many recall? Michal. Michal was King Saul's daughter. She wasn't the first line, like Caleb. Not Caleb. Caleb. But her name was Michal. This Michal was the first woman he ever knew. She protected him and ministered to him. She even lied to her father to keep him alive. She covered him when they sent soldiers to slay him in his bed. She let him down by a basket. He was in love with Michal. In love with her. And that first love is something that you never give up. So even though Michal had other beautiful women, David had other beautiful women as wives, it was Michal. For whatever reason, that was his first love. And she did him good. She saved his life. She ministered to him. She loved him. But what happened? And Saul said, hoping to destroy David, I will give him her, that she may be a snare to him, and that the hand of the Philistines may be against him. Wherefore Saul said to David, thou this day be my son-in-law in one of the two. And he dealt among all, in verse 2 Samuel, he dealt among all people, even among the whole multitude of Israel, as well to the women as men, to everyone a cake of bread and a piece, a good piece, and flagons. So all the people departed, every one of the house. I made a mistake when I was cutting and pasting. But that sounds good. I don't mind a flagon or a piece of bread. The point I want to make. Michal loved David from the beginning, before David even recognized her. I don't know, maybe she gave him a flagon of wine and a piece of bread. I don't know. But I do know that he loved her very much. A lot of things happened. You know, time and circumstance can play difficulty with relationships. Your relationships change with time. But your dedication and your commitment cannot change. You see, Saul initially gave Michal to David to destroy him. And what she did at the beginning was save his life. But at the end, something sad happened. In 1 Samuel 18:21, and Saul said, I will give her. And in 2 Samuel 6:19, and he dealt among all the people. In 2 Samuel 6:20, then David returned to bless his household after he had won a great battle. Remember, he brought the Ark of the Covenant. He danced before the Lord. He took off his outer garment and was dancing before the Lord and praising God. And all Israel was rejoicing. And he had solicited Abner to bring Michal back to his house. And it says that David returned to bless his household. He was so excited about what he did. Then Michal, the woman that saved his life, the daughter of Saul, came out to meet David and said, how glorious was the king of Israel today, who uncovered himself in the eyes of the handmaidens and servants as one of the vain fellows shamelessly uncovers himself. What did she do? She emasculated him in front of everybody. A virtuous woman does not emasculate her husband. A virtuous woman does not emasculate her children. And it was very sad. Very sad. And Saul's, where am I in my notes?
And David said
unto Michael, hey, it was before the Lord, which chose me before thy father, before all his house. Don't tell me there wasn't arguments in marriages. There was. To appoint me ruler over the people of the Lord, over Israel. Therefore, I will play before the Lord. So I'm going to show you, Michael. And in verse 2 Samuel 6:20, and I will be yet more vile than this, and will be base in my own sight, and of the maidservants which thou hast spoken of them shall I be in honor. Even the women that you're trying to bring down or make me look foolish in front of, they will honor me. And this is probably one of the saddest statements in the scriptures, one of the saddest. Therefore, Michael, the daughter of Saul, had no children unto the day of her death, fulfilling the word of the Lord that Saul spoke to her at the beginning. In time, I will deal with this, the counsel of the father. But right now, I want to talk to you when a woman emasculates her children, emasculates her husband, tells him everything that's bad about him, she will kill some of her own fruit. And in this case, Michael had no children. How's that possible? We guesstimate her age is around the age of 35. She was still able. David withdrew himself from her. Now, there's a triumph of women, the virtuous woman. And I think this is one of the most beautiful places in Scripture. And I want you to go in your Bibles to Matthew 26:7, if you would. Matthew, the Gospel of Matthew 26:7. And it came unto him a woman having an alabaster box, a very precious ointment, and poured it on his head as he was eating. And when his disciples saw it, they had indignation, saying to him, what purpose is this waste? For this ointment might have been sold for much and had given to the poor. Ladies, I think one of the things that men cause you to suffer is men do not look at things the way you do. I don't know if you know that. Get used to it, young men, old men. Women have another set of eyes that we don't have. They're looking at the dollars and cents. They're looking at the purpose. And that wasn't the purpose this woman was pouring out upon Jesus. She was pouring out herself on him. Jesus, being the Son of God, the Son of David, Jesus understood it. He said to them, why trouble you the woman? For she has wrought a good work upon me. They're probably scratching their heads. Good work upon me? For you have the poor always with you, but me you have not always. For in that she has poured this ointment on my body, she did it for my burial. And truly I say unto you, wherever the gospel shall be preached in the whole world, there shall also this, that this woman has done, be told for a memorial of her. I enjoyed Dr. Aaron talking about the transmission of documents the other night. I guess I just gravitate to that. And it's true that the manuscripts that are used were written on skins of lambs and goats, but also they were on brass tablets. And they were from papyri. But they've had a discovery called the Magdalene Fragment. You can Google that if you'd like. That they believe dates back pre-100 years, time of Christ. It's just a small fragment that they were able to get a hold of and verify and do all the necessary carbon dating and whatnot. And they realized that the Magdalene Fragment not was written on the papyri, it was written on the in the style, but it gives the only thing that we have to our knowledge or to archaeologists right now is that fragment from the first century church or the first century. And it is the fragment that discusses this very woman that poured the ointment on Jesus' head. Out of all of it, it was this woman. What is the virtuous woman? What is a mother? They're very special. I don't attempt to understand how women think. But something happened the other night that I don't think Sharon minds me to discussing. Sharon in our bedroom has pictures of our daughters, Rachel and Natalie. Her mother. That's another lesson. And my grandchildren. And as I go to bed at night, I look at the wall. Her mother's looking down on me. My mother-in-law. But I look up at the wall, and I see my children, and I see my grandchildren. Every night. I never told Sharon. I really enjoy what she did with the wall. I never told her. I think I told her just twice in the last 2 days. But I realize that a virtuous woman, a mother, has a special place in her heart for her children. And I know, talking to some of you mothers, that there's been incidences that you carry deep in your heart of things you wish you would have done better or you wouldn't have done. And that is something that is indelibly marked on the heart of a woman. Men don't see things that way, but women do. That's why it says in Proverbs that her husband safely trusts in her. There are times in my relationship with Sharon that she wanted to do something and it just didn't make sense. I'm sure that hasn't happened to any of you married men. Why do you want to deliberately take a box of expensive oil and pour it on somebody's head? It doesn't register. But I have found over the years that I have started giving more deference to Sharon than in the beginning. I'm learning. But you women that are mothers have been called especially by the Lord to bring forth children. And if anything you take out of this time that we're talking together is the fact that the impact that you make on your children. I look at Christina's and I look at Andrew. I see her pour out her life for her son, as I do the other mothers. And I recognize that fathers are not that way, but mothers are. It was the women that stood at the foot of the cross. It was the women that went to the tomb. It was the women that were sensitive to the needs of the people. It was the Mary Magdalene's that were willing to humble themselves. It was Mary, the brother, a sister to Lazarus, that was willing to do the same, to wipe Jesus' feet with her hair. Mothers, you're strange creatures. We will never get you. Maybe in eternity we will. But the important thing is Jesus gets you, because he made you. And so, in conclusion, as Brother Ryan holds the fire, let her direct the flame. You hold the bucks, she spends them. That's the way. But the important thing is I want to say to you, mothers, how important you are to your husbands and how important you are to your children and to your children's children. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May his face shine upon each and every one of you. Father, bless the mothers today.